Today we remember one of the greatest guitarists of all time and perhaps the best slide player ever, Duane Allman. There's a new box set out, Skydog, the Duane Allman Retrospective, which gathers together his earliest work, his extensive contributions as a sideman, and of course, with the Allman Brothers. Galadriel Allman is the daughter of the late Duane Allman and Donna Roosman. She has worked hard on the box set for years and is writing a book about her father as well. As her father died when she was only two, I started out by asking her how much she actually knew about Duane Allman before working on these projects.
I feel like I just recently, in the past maybe 5 years, have learned so many things about him because I'm working on a book about him, because I didn't kind of organically learn from his friends, and who were mostly traveling all the time, and the musicians in his life. You know, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to learn personal things about him. So the music was incredibly important source for me. And, you know, I mean, I've had close relationships with my family, of course, with his mother and with Greg, his brother. And my mother would tell me stories. But in terms of the wider sense of who he was as a person and what the arc of his career was, I feel like in some ways, it's really recent knowledge for me. So working on this project has been kind of real education about his work ethic and about the sort of variety of work that he did. And I feel like the music really tells a pretty interesting story on its own, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me a little bit about Greg and Duane's mom, because she comes off, from everything I've read, as a really important, powerful figure.
Yeah, she really is. Her name's Geraldine, and we call her Jerry, and Mama A, that's her nickname. And Mama A is the most remarkable person. She's still with us. She's going to be 96 in July. And she raised them alone. Their father, unfortunately, it's a tragic story. He survived the Battle of the Bulge and came home from World War II and had pulled the Christmas shift at Fort Story, where they were stationed. And the boys were 2 and 3 at the time. And he went out for drinks with his best friend after work, and a guy asked them for a ride, and he mugged them and shot their father, Bill, in the back. And so it was a sudden and very tragic murder, and it really did leave her with a very sudden, whole different life with her babies, with her 2 and 3-year-old. And she moved to Nashville and basically got a CPA degree and learned how to be a bookkeeper and, you know, made a life for them, which, you know, at the time, it was, you know, 1950. It was an unusual thing to do. And she really is a focused, positive, strong person, you know, very funny, very lively. And she really did instill in them, I think, an absolute work ethic and made sure they felt really independent. You know, there's really lots of funny family stories about, you know, her kind of going to clubs and introducing them, like, these are my boys, they're not alone in the world, because they were playing in places when they were 15 and 16 that they wouldn't have been allowed to walk into. And, you know, she made them join the musicians union, and, you know, she basically said, you can work at anything, but you have to work. You know, that was the idea. So she took them seriously with music. You know, she kind of made sure that they were professional about it, even when they were really young. And I think that really shows, you know.
Well, the work ethic, for sure. And in fact, when you look at this disc and you realize all this recording that Duane did in a very, very short period of time, means that he was always following his muse one way or another, with the band or otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's really interesting to watch him, you know. I think there's stories about him literally kind of crossing the hall in Atlantic Studios in New York and kind of jumping in on something else. I think he just filled his time with it. And even when the band, I mean, the Allman Brothers Band toured more than any other American band at the time. They were gone for 300 plus days a year, you know, in 70 and 71. And he would still, you know, he still found time to record Layla, for example.
Right, right.
He'd, you know, go off on tour with Delaney and Bonnie and kind of just thread his way through both tours and jump back and forth. It's remarkable.
Mm. Well, let's go back to the beginning of this this box set as well, which is The Escorts. And and tell me about how old people were. And I mean, this seems to me to be kind of a the British invasion filtered, the blues of the British invasion kind of filtered back to America in a way.
Right, right. Well, you know, they were in a series when they were really young teenagers. So in 1965 with The Escorts, Greg was just graduating from high school, And Dwayne is about exactly a year older. So they were 18 and 19. And before that, you know, within the first probably, Greg got his first guitar in 1960, and Dwayne got his maybe 6 months later because they would sort of argue over it because they both wanted to play it. And they were in smaller bands, but this was their first band that really, you know, recorded and had a more professional. Basically, Greg stayed in high school and Dwayne didn't. Dwayne dropped out of high school as a sophomore and played with other bands, but also played with their smaller band. And this was the first time they really got to sort of professionalize and go on the road and tour and record. And so it was their first sort of legitimate experience. But they had already been playing for a couple of years fairly seriously around town.
Well, you know, it's funny when you realize how young they were, because they sound real seasoned even on these very first recordings.
Yes.
And this is a version of a song you know. This is Turn On Your Love Light by the Escorts in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Escorts, and there you go. That is very, very early Greg Allman. And Dwayne Allman, of course, at that point, not playing slide, playing you know, a regular lead on that, but powerful stuff on from both he and Greg on that. I wanted to play a couple from the sessions that he did at Fame Studios, and there are a couple of the probably better-known ones. But the reason I want to play them is just to hear the interaction between your father, Dwayne Allman, and the artists he'd work with. And did you ever get a chance to talk with any of the artists involved? And I'm talking about, I'm going to play one from Wilson Pickett and one from Aretha. Because, I mean, I'll call Wilson Pickett the Dwayne Allman of vocalists. I mean, he is full bore. He's got it turned
That's
up to
right.
11 the entire time. And this version of Hey Jude, they are duetting at the end of it. And do you know how it came about?
I do. It's a great story, actually. And I didn't talk to Wilson. He was gone before my projects were started. But I talked to Rick Hall, who's the owner of Fame and still runs Fame now. And he's a great storyteller and a really generous man who, you know, loves to tell the history of his really remarkable studio. And he was saying that he and Wilson had, you know, gathered maybe a dozen songs together for his session, but they still didn't feel like they had the one kind of hook, the hit, you know. And Dwayne, this was one of Dwayne's very earliest sessions. I think it was his second, you know, I think he'd done one session with Clarence Carter before this. And he was just so full of enthusiasm. And he said, you know, hey, I've got this idea. Let's try Hey Jude. And Rick just turned to him and said, are you crazy? It's on the charts right now. You know, the Beatles have this hit. You know, we're going to record it and with Wilson Pickett. He's like, that's why we should do it. We should show them what we can do here, you know. And they were just sort of laughing at him and saying, that's just crazy. But then he started to play the lick, you know, and Wilson kind of lit up. And I think he was literally like sitting on a little amp and Wilson was in front of him. You know, it was recorded like live in the room. And you can just feel them probably like smiling at each other, you know, just going back and forth with that energy. And I think it just clicked, you know.
Well, it's interesting on a number of these recordings from Fame how Dwayne doesn't seem like a sideman. His parts, they shine like the stars shine. Was he well received there right from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I think he really did have this spirit in him and really wanted to be a performer, you know, and kind of front and center. And I think the fact that he had a real vocal quality with his playing and this kind of expressiveness, that he was, I think, mostly influenced by singers and horn players and that kind of fluid instrument, I think that was really his approach. So it worked really well with people like Wilson Pickett and Aretha, because he could kind of play back and forth with them. And I think it, you know, it kind of excites them, too. So they make room, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, tell you what, speaking of the good stuff, let's get right to the their kind of duel at the end of Hey Jude. This is Wilson Pickett and Dwayne Allman.
Oh!
Hey Jude, originally a single and actually the title track of Wilson Pickett's album Cut at the Fame Studios with Dwayne Allman on guitar there. I'm getting a chance to talk with Galadriel Allman about the Sky Dog box set of Dwayne Allman's work. And I mentioned Aretha, and I wanted to kind of contrast these two because he's playing dobro on the Aretha, right?
Yeah, I believe so. It's a slide, yeah.
Yeah, and talk about singing the lines with one of the greatest singers out there. Did you hear, was this a live session as well?
I believe so. I think they did do some overdubbing. I don't actually know for sure the story, but I've got pictures of them in the room with Jerry Jamont. And I've talked to Jerry Jamont a little, the bass player on the session. And he's still an incredible player. And I do think that they had some tracking together like that. Mm. And because she played piano as well on some of it. And I think he was really inspired by Aretha. And I was talking to friend of his who worked for Capricorn, who said that, you know, he would go back after he was finished, he went and bought a bottle of wine and would just sit in the control room and listen to her sing and do her tracking. So I think that was a big inspiration and for him.
Well, know. This has always been one of my favorites from those days. This is from the new box set. This is The Wait, Aretha Franklin's version with Dwayne Allman. Aretha and Dwayne and Aretha, Aretha Franklin's version of The Wait, and we're listening to some of the gems, and we're really just scratching the surface of the seven-disc box set Sky Dog, and we're getting a chance to talk with Galadriel Allman, the co-producer of the disc. Now, talk a little bit about his transition to slide and what the inspiration was and how it came about.
Well, he spent almost 2 full years in Los Angeles, which, you know, ostensibly was meant to be the big break. You know, he was in a band called the Allman Joys with his brother, and they lost their bass player and their drummer to, you know, the war, to being in the military, and so one of them got married, one of them went into the military, and they joined forces with Johnny Sandlin and Paul Hornsby and formed the Hourglass, which was, at the time, they didn't have a name when they moved to L.A., but they were basically discovered in playing a gig in St. Louis, and they were by the manager, John McEwen, of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and he was, like, blown away by them, by their live set, by their energy, and he said, you know, you could be like the Rolling Stones. Like, you have to come to L.A. What are you doing playing these little gigs, you know? And so that was, like, really an exciting thing to happen, and they did pretty quickly move to L.A., and tried for a couple years. They recorded a couple of albums, and in that time, it just kind of, they got their hearts broken, really, because they didn't have a lot of control over what they were doing. But, you know, they got to meet a lot of amazing musicians and see a lot of live music. And Dwayne got turned on to Ry Cooder. He got turned on to Jesse Ed Davis, particularly. He went and saw, he and Pete Carr, who was at the time playing bass in the Hourglass, who's also a remarkable, very storied guitar player in his own right. They went and saw Taj Mahal, and he had never seen someone play slide in that kind of small club, and he could really watch what he was doing, and he was just transfixed. He was like, that's it. That's the sound that he, you know, it really spoke to him. So he kind of went on a quest. He got the album, and the story goes that he had a cold, and Greg brought him over some Chorazitin for his cold, and he, you know, immediately saw the shape of the bottle and dumped out the pills and started playing with it. And that's the bottle he used for the rest of his life, that, you know, he would have them by cases, and that was his tool. But, he heard a lot of great music in L.A., so that's the one thing that came out of it that was really his inspiration. So, you know, he went, when that band fell apart, which it did, because they weren't, you know, they wanted to play blues. You know, there's a song on this box called the B.B. King Medley, which was really sort of their statement of intent. You know, they left L.A. and went back to fame because they knew that the room sounded so beautiful. Johnny Sandlin, their drummer, had worked there as a teenager. And they wanted to sort of give Liberty Records, their record label, an example of what they would do themselves if they weren't being shown what to do. Because, you know, Liberty wanted them to sort of catch in on this sort of San Francisco psychedelic sound, and that's really not where they were coming from. So they record this amazing medley, and they got rejected. And that's when Duane went to Fame. And once he was at Fame and kind of had a lot of time on his hands between sessions, he really dug in with the slide. He really started practicing all the time. And by all accounts, there it grew by leaps and bounds very quickly. He had a natural touch for it.
Well, so could you say that the Hourglass plus time spent at Fame woodshedding begat the Allman Brothers?
Absolutely. And I think that's why the B.B. King medley is so interesting, because it does sound sort of like a prototypical Allman Brothers song. You know, all the pieces are there.
B.B. King medley by the Hourglass. That was the early band that Greg and Duane Allman had in Los Angeles. Most of the Hourglass material doesn't sound like that, but on their own, that's what they sounded like doing the B.B. King medley. We're talking with Galadriel Allman about her dad, Duane Allman, in this wonderful Sky Dog retrospective, which I guess, Galadriel, is going to be the soundtrack to your book in a way, right?
Yeah, it's been a soundtrack to writing the book for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really interesting and helpful to kind of have the deep tracks to listen to while, trying to tell the story of the time, you know?
Well, we better move on a little bit because we're only in disc two
here. There's a lot of room to cover.
A lot of things to cover. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to after the Allman Brothers have formed that first album, which you put on this disc in its entirety, which I think was a great move because it was such a it wasn't until later that album actually sold, but at the beginning it was just such a statement. I'm going to skip all the way to something that I just love to get some stories on, which is the Layla sessions, which took place while the band, while the Allman Brothers were touring, and after a gig, Duane went over to Criteria to visit his. Actually, he didn't even know Eric, right?
No, he didn't know Eric. He was close to Tom Dowd, who was producing both the Allman Brothers and Eric, and he knew that Eric was coming to work with Tom, and he sort of talked to Tom ahead of time and said, you know, I'd really love to meet him. And Tom said, great, I'll call you, you know, when he's there. And they were, the Allman Brothers were actually in Miami playing a gig, and Tom brought Eric and the rest of the Dominoes to the gig. And afterwards, they all went together back to the studio and had a long jam, everybody in the band, both bands. And it was just instantly very comfortable between Eric and Duane, you know. I don't think there was even a lot of, you know, talking. They were just sitting down talking with their guitars, you know. And Tom was he told the story in such beautiful ways. You know, he really witnessed this moment of these two people coming together. And he asked him to stay, and he did. And he came back once for overdubs later. But it was all, you know, all in. It was probably 10 days of recording and not a lot of wasted time. You know, he came in and really sort of changed the whole mood and tenor of the songs that, you know, by all accounts, that session was sort of bogging down. There wasn't a lot getting accomplished. And Duane, you know, took, you know, his style and just laid out some really strong playing that kind of wrote everything kind of raised up, you know.
Another example of Duane walking into the room and galvanizing things.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the lick at the beginning of Layla is Duane's, and it's hard to imagine that song without it, you know?
No. One of the licks in rock and roll. We got to play it. This is Layla.
Yeah.
Derek and the Dominoes, Eric Clapton, Dwayne Allman on guitar, and Layla, and as we've just heard from Galadriel Allman, the signature lick on that guitar was Dwayne's, and he really galvanized that session, which took place in Miami. There's another little thing on the disc that follows it, which is an acoustic song with Dwayne and Eric. Where is that from?
That's from the same sessions, and I think that that's how they kind of got to know each other. You know, it was sort of like, do you know this one? And, yeah, man, let's play that one. And, you know, they just sort of, I think at a certain point, Tom just let the tape roll. And so they dug into some old blues and, you know, kind of, it's just sort of a warm-up, I think, you know, talking to each other. And Dwayne just, you know, Dwayne loved Eric, and he was incredibly proud of that session, and he was very humble about it, you know. He would probably not approve of me telling you which licks he played. When people used to ask him who played what, he would say, you know, he plays a Fender and I play a Gibson, and if you can hear the difference, then you know who played what.
Well, this is Eric Clapton and Dwayne Allman on acoustics and Dobro on the Needle World. Eric Clapton and Dwayne Allman from the sessions that gave us Layla a little bit of a different sound and, of course, what you normally hear from Derek and the Dominoes. We're talking with Galadriel Allman about the Sky Dog box set. And Galadriel Allman, what a labor of love. And I'm totally looking forward to the book. You've had a chance to talk to a lot of people over the years.
Yeah, I have. I've been working on it for about 4 years and have talked to everyone that I could, really, a lot of his friends and family, his cousin, his different studio musicians that he worked with, you know, some of the primary musicians, you know, Dr. John, and of course the current band and my uncle, and it's been a life-changing experience for me. It really has. Mm-hmm. I've met a lot of people that I've only ever heard about, and everyone is really generous, and without exception, everyone that talks about my father remembers him with great detail and fire, you know, can kind of immediately, you see their face change when they talk about him. Mm. They're really touched by him, and he had a kind of special life force that really impacted people. He's a very enthusiastic, positive person, you know. Mm. So that's been really a gift.
You wrote one of the essays in the booklet as well. What inspired you to start writing?
You know, I've always wanted to write, and I think part of it is that I couldn't step into the shoes of being a musician, but I wanted to be a creative person, you know, and just by personality, I'm kind of a watcher, you know, and I was raised around these incredibly interesting, flamboyant, bohemian people always, and I think I just absorbed all of that with a lot of curiosity, so, you know, I was lucky to sort of get handed this incredible, epic American story. So I felt like I had to do something with it, you know. But I started wanting to write this book when I was 20, you know, and I just sort of had to wait until I was older and stronger to be able to, you know, really commit to it and do it. So now's the time. So it's going well. It's due in August, and it'll be out early next year.
Well, we look forward to that. Galadriel Allman, thank you so much for your work on this, and thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.